Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America on Saturday, November 26th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impulga in Washington. M23 rebels continue the offensive in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo, despite accepting the ceasefire as recommended by the Luanda summit. A top UN refugee agency official calls on South Sudan to do more to support infrastructure development and invest in good governance to encourage the return of refugees.
The government should support initiatives of that nature, do more initiatives of that nature, continue to invest in good governance to make sure that there is peace, make sure that security is good, and then to make sure that when people come back, they have access to the services that they need to have.
And Ghana's finance minister says the country is at high risk of debt distress as the currency, the cedi, depreciates against the US dollar and increases its foreign debt.
The demand for foreign exchange supports our unbridled demand for imports undermines and weakens the value of the cedi. This contributed to the depreciation of the cedi, which has lost about 53.8% of its value since the beginning of this year. Compared to the average 7% annual depreciation of the cedi between 2017 and 2021. The current year's depreciation, which is driving the high cost of goods and services for everyone, is clearly an aberration and a very expensive one indeed.
Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. M23 rebels were still fighting and advancing on one front of the offensive in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday as a ceasefire came into force, civilian and military sources said. Clashes continued after the 1700 GMT deadline to cease fire near Bwiza, about 40 kilometers north of the provincial capital Goma, local people told AFP by telephone. The French press agency was not able to independently confirm the account. Bwiza was the stronghold of former Congolese Tutsi rebel leader Laurent Nkunda, who operated there in the 2000s. Fighting also took place during the day between the M23 and the Hutu militia in Bambo, 70 kilometers from Goma. A security source confirmed fighting between the M23 and soldiers of the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR, a Hutu faction present in the DRC since the 1994 genocide of Tutsis in Rwanda. Calm seemed to have returned to Bambo as evening fell. The situation appeared more settled 20 kilometers north of Goma, where a front line has formed during the last 2 weeks close to the town of Kibumba, on National Highway 2. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and Rwandan Foreign Minister Vincent Biruta met in Angola on Wednesday. They agreed to a deal on the cessation of hostilities in eastern DRC starting Friday evening local time. M23 rebels were to withdraw from occupied zones, and if they did not, the East African Regional Force would intervene. But the rebels, allegedly Congolese Tutsi militia, said Thursday the ceasefire didn't really concern them and called for direct talks with the DRC government. On Friday, Bertrand Bisimwa, president of the M23, put out a statement in English, saying yet again the M23 accepts the ceasefire as recommended by the Luanda summit. But he called on Kinshasa to respect the said ceasefire, otherwise, he said M23 reserves the full right to defend itself. A top UN refugee agency official says South Sudan should do more to support infrastructure development and invest in good governance to encourage the return of refugees. The UNHCR Assistant High Commissioner for Operations, who is visiting South Sudan, says more than 600,000 South Sudanese refugees have voluntarily returned home over the past few years. Deng Gai Deng recently visited Magui County and has filed this report for VOA from Juba.
The refugee agency, UNHCR, says Eastern Equatoria has the highest number of returns, with more than 110,000 out of an estimated 600,000 refugees who have returned to South Sudan since 2018. Rahuf Mazou, Assistant High Commissioner for UNHCR Operations, says the returns are voluntarily, with most refugees heading back to the ancestral villages. Mazo says the government should take the lead on supporting infrastructure development and invest in good governance to ensure that there is sustainable peace, which would encourage more refugees to return home.
The government should support initiatives of that nature, do more initiatives of that nature, continue to invest in good governance to make sure that there is peace, make sure that security is good, and then to make sure that when people come back, they have access to the services that they need to have. Healthcare.
Mado says UNHCR will continue to support the people of South Sudan, but says he would like to see the government use its available resources, including its oil revenues, to support agriculture and build infrastructure such as roads.
So it's for the government primarily to bring on board development actors, the World Bank, the various other international financial institutions, to come and help invest for the long term. And there's also the resources that the government is getting from the oil, which is important and which can also be invested to make sure that people will be able to fend for themselves in the future.
Manasseh Lomele, chairperson of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, says the government is doing what it can to create a conducive environment for the returnees.
I think the most important part that the government can play is to create an enabling environment, peaceful environment, making sure that nobody interrupts the return of our people and that the people can come and settle down. Then the government will come in with support.
Women sang songs this week as they welcomed a UNHCR team to Magui County, where the UN body supports farmers, most of whom are returnees, with tools and seeds. In the song, the women say a country cannot progress without agriculture and call on everyone to support farmers. Former refugee Jessica Nek, who returned to her village in Magui County from a camp in Uganda, says she came home because the situation in the camp was not good.
In camp there, we have the problem many. No firewood, everything, nothing. Now here, we look everything. You get it. Those people, we call, the name is UNHCRs. We help me with everything. Now, when we come to the camp, the children not go to school everywhere. When the UNHCR is coming, we give it the knowledge. Now all the children go to school.
Returnee Mary Ayero says is happy to be back home and will farm to feed her family. But Ayero says she wants the government to stabilize the security situation in the country and construct more roads so that farmers can access the market.
I decided to return and I said it is better to come back home to farm, because the things are not good there. The food was not enough at the camp, and it was not enough for the children. I came with all my children. We need support, such as clothes and education for the children.
UNHCR says it has rolled out pockets of hope, area-based programs across 5 locations, including in Torit and Magui counties of Eastern Equatoria State. The refugee agency says it also constructed an administrative block for Eastern Equatoria to highlight the close collaboration between the government and the UN in seeking solutions for displaced South Sudanese. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Juba.
Ghana's finance minister says the country is at high risk of debt distress as the currency, the cedi, has depreciated against the U.S. dollar, increasing its foreign debt by $6 billion U.S. dollars this year alone. Ghana on Thursday announced more spending cuts, including a freeze on government hiring and a hike in the value-added tax. It's also looking to buy oil using gold rather than U.S. dollars as the West African country grapples with the worst economic crisis in a generation. Kent Mensah reports from Accra.
There is an immense pressure on the Ghanaian government to turn things around as the economy takes a downward spiral with inflation hitting a record 40% in October. Traders closed their shops last month to protest the rising cost of goods and services as citizens decry the high cost of living. Market confidence is very low as the West African country negotiates with the International Monetary Fund, IMF, for a US $3 billion deal to help restructure the economy. Presenting the 2023 budget in Parliament Thursday, Finance Minister Ken Ofori-Atta, who some governing party lawmakers have already called for the president to fire, said depreciation of the cedi continues to be a huge problem as the government strives to address the country's current challenges.
The demand for foreign exchange supports our unbridled demand for imports undermines and weakens the value of the cedi. This contributed to the depreciation of the cedi, which has lost about 53.8% of its value since the beginning of this year. Compared to the average 7% annual depreciation of the cedi between 2017 and 2021, the current year's depreciation, which is driving the high cost of goods and services for everyone, is clearly an aberration and a very expensive one indeed.
As part of the measures to get the economy back in shape, Ofori-Atta announced a freeze on new tax waivers for foreign companies, a review of tax exemptions for mining, oil and gas companies, and a reduction in the fuel allocation to government appointees. Daniel Amate, an economist with the Accra-based Policy Initiative for Economic Development, PIED, said the spending cuts send a positive signal, but he wants the government to focus more on blocking leaks in the system.
What could be done more significantly in terms of minimizing government expenditure has to do with the corruption in the system and then the financial malfeasance. So we should have a way of addressing corruption and its related offenses. And so I'm of the view that the government, if indeed is ready to minimize expenditure, should empower the Office of the Special Prosecutor to be able to deal with corruption and its related offenses.
Meanwhile, the Vice President Mahmoud Bawumia announced on Facebook that Ghana is working on a new policy, effective next year, to buy oil products with gold rather than US dollar reserves as part of the government measures to strengthen the cedi. Explaining how the policy works, Gideon Boakun, the spokesperson of the Vice President, in a text to VOA said, "It is basically going to be a government-to-government transaction. The significant drain on the forex FX, the foreign exchange marketplace, is from oil imports. Once you lock that tunnel, you are good on the FX side." He added, "The government of Ghana will buy gold locally with cedis through the Bank of Ghana, the financier, and then exchange the gold for fuel, oil, in a barter form, for example, with the government of UAE." Amate described the policy as innovative.
"A very progressive one. Within the shortest possible time, it should be able to help us address the depreciation of the cedi. So less dollar will be used in terms of that exportation."
Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Jihadists aligned with the Islamic State group are advancing in northeastern Mali, prompting terrified citizens to flee their homes, sources there say. The Islamic State in the Greater Sahara, ISGS, launched an offensive in the Gao and Menaka regions in March, triggering heavy fighting with local armed groups and rival Islamic extremists. Witnesses and other sources contacted by French press agency confirmed the ISGS sustained push in this remote and dangerous area, and rights campaigners say civilians have been massacred. The strategic towns of Gao and Manakam have long been the forefront of Mali's decades-long jihadi crisis. Since 2012, thousands have died and hundreds of thousands have fled their homes in an insurgency that has spread neighboring Niger and Burkina Faso. Despair at the toll prompted Malian armed officers to mount a coup in 2020. The junta has brought in Russian paramilitaries, a move that has prompted France to pull out troops who had been battling jihadists for 9 years. Zambian authorities say they will travel next week to Russia to retrieve the body of a 23-year-old Zambian who died while fighting for the Russian military in Ukraine. His family and the Zambian government are still waiting for answers from Moscow on how he was recruited into the army while serving a 9-year prison sentence in Russia. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
Zambian Ministry of Information and Media spokesperson Tabo Kawana confirmed that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is spearheading efforts to bring the body of the deceased student, Lemekani Nathan Urenda, back to Zambia for burial.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs is in personal and direct contact with the family and has visited the family, and the government is also offering support to the family during this trying moment and doing everything they can to arrange for the funeral and the repatriation of the body back to Zambia. Using our diplomatic channels and our all-weather cooperation between Russia and ourselves, we will be able to get to the bottom of this matter.
The deceased student was born in a middle-class family of university lecturers at the University of Zambia, Edwin and Florence Nirenda. He was the fourth and last born in a family of four. He had a twin brother, Tivo Nirenda. Lemekani's older sister, Mwanangalo Nirenda, says her brother had big dreams to develop Zambia. She says her close-knit family is devastated by his death.
He was our baby brother. They have robbed him of his bright future. Why? This hurts so bad. We need some answers from Russia.
Peter Daka, a close friend for over 5 years to Lemekani Nathan Urenda, based in Moscow, Russia, described him as a determined and brilliant young man.
But he was certainly a good boy. Serious and determined at what he was doing. He's the guy who knew exactly what he wanted and went for it. In whatever scandal he found himself in 2020, personally I never understood. It is sad that in the end, we lost him.
For Boniface Chembe, a human rights defender and executive director of the Southern African Center for the Constructive Resolution of Disputes, a human rights think tank, Lemekani Nirenda's basic human rights were violated by Russia.
There are issues around human rights, especially the right to choice, especially where it concerns the consent of the said individual.
The Russian embassy in Lusaka refused to comment on the matter despite promising to do so through a press query. Zambia's Foreign Affairs Minister Stanley Kakubo announced last Monday that Nirenda, who had been studying at the Moscow Engineering Physics Institute, was serving a 9-year prison sentence for a drug offense. He said Nirenda was killed on the front lines in September, but Russian authorities had only just informed Zambia of the death. Kakubo said that Zambia had demanded answers over the student's death and why he had been sent to Ukraine. Many Zambians are shocked by the news, but also frustrated that the government has not shared more information to explain the circumstances that led to the student being deployed to Ukraine. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Today in World Cup action, Australia held on to a narrow first-half lead to beat Tunisia 1-0. The result keeps alive Australia's hopes of qualifying for the World Cup last 16, but Tunisia, who take on France in their final match, might not make it. My colleague Sandy Somari is in Qatar. Sandy, what's the reaction over there?
Fans here were expecting, especially the Tunisian fans, this was something that they thought was in the bag. So you can imagine Tunisia has a lot of support. And when they were going in this game, they had a lot of hopes that they will make it happen, but it didn't happen. So Tunisia fans really are disappointed with the game.
And as Sander, they say, soccer is soccer. Now the biggest task for Tunisia is to face France in their last group game. What chances do they have of beating France to qualify?
As we say, the Swahili says that the baobab tree has been taken down. You're asking a small boy to take a baobab tree down. It's a big task. It's a big mountain that Tunisia is facing right now to beat the giants of the world, the reigning World Cup champions, France. I mean, if you look at that, realistically, everyone thinks this is not easy. France is a great team, and Tunisia has a very big job to do. But Douglas, I always tell people, this World Cup is full of surprises, and who knows what they can bring in the last game. Who knew Argentina would have lost? Who knew Germany would have lost to Japan? So Tunisians have to keep their heads up to face the France team, Le Bleu. But winning is yet to be known. However, anything can happen, Douglas. We have to wait and see.
And to be fair, this tournament, African teams are having it rough. Not so?
Well, you can say half-half. You're right, because Senegal is the only team that has won a game. Others came with draw as their best, Tunisia and Morocco. And as you saw, Ghana lost. And it's been not very easy for the African teams so far. I mean, they're in a situation where they look like they have to redeem themselves. You know, Morocco has the first draw. Now, Morocco's following game is going to be against Belgium, and they need a win. Could that happen? It seems not easy. So you're right, African teams so far, they're having a bit of a rough time.
Thanks, Sandy. Meanwhile, World Cup host Qatar was eliminated from the tournament Friday after losing to Senegal in its second match 3-1. The elimination from the tournament is the quickest for a host country in World Cup history. South Africa is the only other host team that did not make it past the group stage of the tournament, but it was able to win one of its matches. For all the latest on the World Cup, check out voaafrica.com/World Cup and stay tuned to all your favorite VOA programs, including the Sunny Side of Sports. And coming up is On Goal with Sunny and Mokbill. VOA's own Sunny Young and Mokbill Yaboro break down all the action in the first week of the World Cup group play.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. In-depth coverage, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the four corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we say thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America, VOA.
sporty World Cup. Greetings to all of our Voice America viewers and listeners. Welcome to On Goal with Sonny and Muckbill. Sonny, how's it going, man?
Great, Muckbill. Great to be back here in Studio 2 for Episode 2. And it looks like you've got some different colors on your chest, Muckbill.
Yeah, I had to switch it up a little bit. Spain, after what they did to Costa Rica, I thought it was very fitting. 7-0.
Well, Muckbill, I've got some Spanish ties this evening also.
Why don't you tell us about your jersey right over there?
Malaga FC, they're a second-tier team in Spain. And my son gave me this jersey. He taught in Spain for a little while. So shout out for Malaga in Spain's second division. As we speak, Muckbill, all five African teams have seen action in Qatar at the World Cup. Why don't you run down the results?
Absolutely. So we had one win, two draws, and three losses for the African team. One win and one loss for Senegal. One draw for Tunisia. One draw for Morocco. One loss for Cameroon and a loss for Ghana as well. I would definitely have to say that Senegal match is the first win for the African teams. 3-1 against Qatar.
Big win. Big win.
Huge.
And the Lions of Taronga still in contention for a knockout round appearance, and it would be great to see them advance.
No, absolutely. I feel as though a lot of the African teams have played well. Unfortunately, they haven't got the results that they would have liked. Ghana against Portugal, an amazing effort by the Black Stars. Definitely, we will definitely keep talking about all these African teams. We have online Abdurrahman Dia, live from Dakar, Senegal. Abdurrahman, how is the energy in Senegal after that Qatar win for Senegal?
Well, it is very different from what we saw on Monday when Senegal lost 2-0 against the Netherlands. Tonight, people are celebrating. They have been celebrating since the end of the game today against Qatar. Very joyful, very festive, really, and a sense of relief that, you know, the team has a chance to move on. So people are really relieved. That is actually the word. Because at some point during the game, at least until Boulaye delivered that goal, you know, people were starting to have some doubt. Will they be able to score? Because they were having a lot of opportunity, but they were missing them. So after that, people were really, you know, they just let it go. All flags out, you know, scarves. People really are out right now at night. I'm in the middle of downtown Dakar, and people are really out celebrating.
Sporty World Cup greetings, Abdurrahman, Sonny Young here in Studio 2. As we look at the Group A standings, Abdurrahman, the Netherlands and Ecuador at the top with 4 points from two matches. Senegal right behind them with 3 points from two matches. Host Qatar has been eliminated. What's your sense among Senegalese football fans about the Lions of Taronga advancing to that knockout stage? They will close group play against Ecuador.
And you're absolutely right. It is true that people are celebrating their victory today, but they were watching with great interest what was going on in that other game between the Netherlands and Ecuador. And, you know, that was not the result that they were hoping. They were all ruling here for the Netherlands. But I think it is like a source of motivation now. They know that the team have to win. And many here really think that it is possible because they were praising the coach, Alun Cisse, for trusting, you know, young players like Iliman Jai. And they said that is the winning goal. Sadio Mane not being here, they have to rely on the young players and give them the opportunity to show off and really to bright.
Absolutely. Abdurrahman, I definitely agree with you. As much as it would have been lovely for the Dutch to win for the Senegal side, I definitely believe that it was still a better outcome than if the Ecuador side would have won. Now, if Ecuador Absolutely. Would have won, Senegal would be in a very, very difficult situation. How do you feel like this Senegal side matches up against Ecuador and what we've seen from Ecuador so far?
Well, Ecuador is a strong team. They play together. You know, the fact that they don't have like a big star is, I was saying the other day, is maybe a good thing for them, because now it's the whole team playing together. And Senegal is kind of in the same position. They have to rely on each other. And many people here think that, you know, it is possible they can win against Ecuador, but this team is very strong. But the fact that Senegal won today against Qatar, which is the host country, you know, is giving an extra motivation for everybody, not only the fans, but I'm sure the teams as well, because they want to move on to the next round. But Ecuador is a team to be taken very, very seriously.
Abdulrahman, Aliou Cisse captained Senegal at the 2002 World Cup in Japan and South Korea. Now he's one of five local coaches leading African teams in Qatar. What's your sense about Cisse and how important he is to the success of the Teranga Lions in Qatar?
It's one of the stories, isn't it, to have the five teams being coached by, you know, local technicians is something that really stands out. And Aliou Cisse has been with the team for many years now, and I think it is a personal success story, not only for him, but a way to show many African countries that it is, we have maybe the team, the people to lead those teams. And it is just, you know, it could get really better if he makes it to the second round, I think. So, yeah, I think from now on it's going to be something that we will see more and more often in Africa, you know, people relying on African coaches.
Abdulrahman, do you feel as though the big story now is still Sadio Mane missing out on Senegal, or with Enner Valencia being the lead top scorer in the tournament so far with three goals going up against Senegal and how he matches up against Kalubali? What are your thoughts on that matchup?
Well, many people here trust Koulibaly. And as for Sadio Mane, I think people have now moved on. You know, they were shocked, especially after the first game against the Netherlands. Really, people did miss him. Now I think they know that he won't be here. They're going to have to do without him. People have kind of moved on, really, if I can rely on what people are saying on local media and on the streets as well.
Abdulrahman, where do you rate Edouard Mendy among the goalkeepers in Qatar?
I was saying earlier to my colleague in the French service that actually Mendy today kind of reconciled with, you know, the fans, because the first game he was criticized heavily by the team. They thought that he was the one who cost Senegal the game. Today, really, he was praised everywhere. And I think today he did, you know, do a great game, great saves. And let's hope that he stays that way. Somebody was saying earlier, one of the analysts was saying, really, even though people were criticizing him, it was a good move for Aliou Cisse to keep him, at least to give him a chance to, you know, to come back. And also, even thinking about his club, Chelsea, maybe if he does a good tournament, he will go back and take back his, you know, his place.
Abdulrahman Dia speaking with us from Dakar, Senegal. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
How about that? Honestly, Senegal, the first African team to have gotten a victory in the tournament so far. Do you think this is the first team and only team that'll get a victory in the group stages, Sonny? What are your thoughts?
I still think we might see a victory from Ghana, Morocco, and maybe Tunisia. I know Cameroon had a very tough loss in its opening match. I think that group is just too tough for them to get out of, Mukbil, with Serbia and Brazil. I think Cameroon plays, I think they play Serbia next, if I'm not mistaken. But shout out for the Teranga Lions, reigning African champions. I think they were generally regarded as the strongest African team going to Qatar, and I think right now they're proving it.
No, I definitely agree with you. I feel like this is the perfect time to get our guy on live with us. Jackson Vugani is with us live from Accra, Ghana. Jackson.
40 greetings to you, Mobile and Sonny.
Sporty World Cup greetings.
Welcome, guys. Good to see you. So the energy is still, you know, the same. The guys here are really excited and they're encouraged and inspired by this team, the Black Stars. They showed out yesterday, honestly. I think probably the first, African team to score two goals. And they said that if it wasn't for that penalty, where, you know, it was a little questionable, that the ref should have consulted the VAR system. You know, Ronaldo was able to convert that penalty in the early, you know, in the opening minutes of the match. That if it wasn't for that, they probably would have come up with either a win, because there's something that, you know, psychologically happens to a team when they get scored on in the first couple of minutes. And if they felt it was a little unfair that the ref, and if you hear the coach Otto Addo, who many actually blamed, they don't blame the Black Stars as a team. They said the coach made some strategic mistakes, and we'll talk about that later on. But they said that if it wasn't for that penalty, the Black Stars would have actually come out with a win, or at least a draw. And it would have been the first African win. But that was yesterday. Today, we know that it's a different story, and that Senegal has made history in this World Cup by being the first team to win in the World Cup. But, you know, the energy's still up. These guys are very encouraged. They're inspired. They think that their team could have a chance in this World Cup.
Jackson, that was a history-making penalty kick by Cristiano Ronaldo. And as you mentioned, lots of controversy surrounding that penalty kick. In terms of Ronaldo's stature, Jackson, do you think that might have been one of the reasons why they didn't go to video review to confirm whether it was actually a penalty, that maybe, you know, his superstar status played into it?
Listen, we that's a good point, Sonny. And we've seen that in other sports. Mukbil and I love basketball a lot, so we know that sometimes we've complained when some of these big superstars in the NBA, make a blunder or, you know, carry the ball and the ref will not call a walk or some of those little tiny mistakes. It's quite possible because of his legendary status. Ronaldo is a legend, no doubt. It's quite possible because of that, they decided, you know what, or the ref decided, you know what, this guy, we're going to give him a pass and we're not going to consult. And that really was the difference maker in this game.
Yeah, no, I definitely would agree with your sentiments, Jackson. We've seen superstar calls happen across the board in different sports, and I think that definitely was one of them. But I definitely love the resolve that the Ghanaian side showed. Being down 1-0 to Portugal, that is a very dominant and highly ranked team coming into this tournament. How do you feel like they did when they tried to come back? And what are your thoughts on Mohamed Kudus, the young superstar of the Black Stars?
Absolutely. Mohamed Kudus, I think, is everybody's favorite player here in Ghana. Everybody I've spoken to, I asked, who's your favorite player? They like Mohamed Kudus. And, you know, they have an exciting team of young players. And, you know, this in a way encourages, it shows where the future of this team is going in the coming years. That, you know, they have a young group of people, of young players that are so talented, and they have ambition, and they have the capacity and the potential to actually make it to the finals, even this World Cup. But, you know, let's hear to some. I spoke to a couple of people here right after the match when things were a little hard, sentiments were a little hard, and this is what they had to say.
I'm very, very, very angry. Why would a good coach behave like this? You're playing a Portugal. These are old men. Pepe, Ronaldo, very old men.
You mean experienced?
They are very experienced, but they don't have the energy anymore. You have the equalization now. Relax. Play them at least 8 minutes. If you see that they are still playing, being stubborn, you bring the young ones who can run at them. And I believe our way should have been drawn.
2-2?
2-2.
What are some of the things they could have done different to win this game?
This game, I think the approach for the first half was good. We tested their strength. And I thought we should have continued like that, getting to the last minute. Then we will use our strength, the young ones that we have, to deal with them. That was my plan, because I thought the first half was good. Even though they were controlling the game, we were soaking them, holding them up. So I thought, second half, just continue the same thing. We're getting to the 60th, 70th minute, we just see if we can run at them and cause some mistakes in them and get a point.
Who was your favorite player for the game?
For the game, Kudus Mohamed. Kudus Mohamed. Even though the first half you couldn't see him well, but you could see for second half, Kudus Mohamed. I know he's our man. I was expecting 2-1 in favor of Ghana, because I know the caliber of players that we have. That if we're able to keep these ones, if we're able to maintain our composure in this game, we would have gotten the 3 points.
What do I make of the match between Ghana and Portugal? I think it was a good game. The guys did so well. I loved it. Though at a point I was scared. But on a whole, they did so well. And even though Ghana didn't win, hey, the boys did amazingly well. Mohamed Kudus, Dede Ayew, come on. They did so well. And I'm proud of them.
Kudos for yes, Kudus. Kudos for Kudus, Jackson.
Kudos for Kudus.
You know, when I watched him on the pitch against Portugal, Jackson, he had so much creativity and ingenuity and energy and spark. And I thought he was the engine for the Black Stars of Ghana. A young man making his World Cup debut. I side with those who think he should have stayed in the match.
Absolutely. They say, many people blame the coach. They say that Coach Otto Addo made a strategic blunder by removing Kudus and Ayew. It didn't make sense to anybody really watching the game to take out the guys that have actually scored. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, that's something that he will change going forward. But let me just say this, you know, Portugal is ranked number 9 in the world right now. It's a European powerhouse. These guys, to be able to have come up with a, you know, if you take out the penalty, a 2-on-2, a draw, really, you know, if you remove the penalty, that says something about this Ghanaian team.
No, Jackson, I definitely agree. I think there's more to take away from it than the loss, right? Being the first African teams to have scored, that's number one. Knowing full and well that the game was within grasp for them is another thing. So they can take that energy to their second game. And who knows? People were already expecting them to lose to Portugal, right? But
yeah,
that doesn't have to be the case for the second game or the third game. Now, I will say this, to play devil's advocate for Coach Addo, right? You have the captain, Ayew, who has a yellow card, right? After his goal, he was playing very aggressive. You might want to take him off because you can't afford to have him have a red card. That's understandable. Kudus, because of the fact that Mohamed Kudus was also such a dominant force in the game, and he is your almost Neymar-like player, do you want him to get injured? If you're thinking that the game is going to be 1-1, you're hoping to put in two fresh legs that are going to be able to sustain it for you. I don't see the move being a bad move, but when it plays out the way that it does, it looks like it's a bad move in hindsight. So, I don't know. I think people should kind of take it a little easy on Coach Addo, you know.
I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. Again, you know, it's very easy to play armchair, you know, pundits out here like coaches. But honestly, when you're in the hot seat as the coach, you have the weight of the whole match on you, even, you know, more so than the players. So, I mean, he might, would you say in the heat of the moment, he probably didn't make the right decisions, but also it's possible that he made those kind of calculations, like you said, and he said, I don't want to be down one player, even though this is my star player, let me take him out. Also, we saw what happened to Neymar, speaking of that, you know, that equivalency between these two superstars. You don't want your bulldog to, so to say, to get injured when you feel like you kind of have the tactical advantage. But is that the reason that it cost them the game? Is, you know, again, this game is much more physical as it is mental. And some of these little, you know, moves that you make could cost people mentally, and it could give an advantage to the opposing team. Now, we don't know whether that is what happened in this case, but soccer is soccer.
Jackson, the Black Stars will next play South Korea on November 28th. How do you see that match?
Oh, South Korea is not easy. Okay, South Korea will run you out of the game. They do not stop from the beginning to the end. These guys are really fast. And, you know, the Black Stars have a tough match ahead of them. But, you know, people are actually really confident. This, if anything, coming out of this match, the one team that I'm really looking forward to is Uruguay. Yeah. But for South Korea, the sentiment is that they will be able to sail past South Korea easily. But in my opinion, it might be a little tough battle. But we'll see.
Man, Jackson, as you mentioned, there is a bit of historical significance to that Uruguay team. Uruguay versus Ghana 12 years ago. Very controversial move by Suarez, who's still on the team. How do you think the Ghanaian people still feel about that match?
I know. You know, listen, the Ghanaian, everybody talks about that. Everybody. It was a move they feel like stole the World Cup. It's like they had been, it's like they had qualified for the finals and somebody just snatched it. But they weren't even going to the finals. But listen, there's beef, okay? There's beef, and Suarez better be ready because these guys, I think everybody's looking at Suarez more than anybody else. And the fact that, you know, he's still one of the players that is there. I was talking to some to the guy that I spoke to earlier. I'm like, listen, is it possible that these young players that are part of the Black Stars right now do not have that memory, that institutional memory of what happened at the time? And the guy's like, no, nobody forgets. Nobody forgot. Everybody, whether you're on the pitch or not, you remember Suarez snatching that defeat out of our hands. And listen, you better watch out, Suarez. Black Stars are coming for you.
Well, Jackson, the Black Stars have, I think I read where they might have the youngest team in Qatar. I think the average age on the Black Stars is like 24. Do you get the sense after that result against Portugal, granted a loss, but it was a hard-fought loss, do you think that's going to inspire them against South Korea and Uruguay?
Listen, these guys do not play young. If you watch the game like we all did, these guys look like veterans on that pitch, okay? They were playing one of the most dominant players in Ronaldo, one of the most dominant teams in Portugal, ranked number nine, and they were able to put on a fight. You know, you could see some of the moves they were making. These are not new to this, you know, and they dominated really in many ways this game. And honestly, I think that they're going into the South Korea game with that confidence, with that bravado that they can do it. I think they needed this. If it would have been nice to get that win, but I think just getting the two goals and that's just looking from us, the way they were playing, I feel like they have what it takes to get far. Would I say they're going to win the World Cup? Really not. But would I say they'll come close to the 20 to the Alia Black Stars? Yes.
Jackson, thank you so much, man. I'm loving the energy, brother. I'm hoping you're enjoying yourself, and we definitely will be checking back in with you. Jackson Vugani, man, he's in Ghana at the moment, from Accra, Ghana. We will be right back.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. In-depth coverage, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the four corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
We are back. So much exciting football to talk about. Sonny, what are your thoughts, man? What are your thoughts on what we've been discussing today and what we got coming forward, man?
Well, I agree. You know, the Ronaldo's a big name in the tournament. We still have Messi. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we could still see some goals from him, which leads me to best goals so far in Qatar. I think I might have to go with Richarlison against Serbia. That was Brazil's second goal. Absolutely spectacular. You were describing it to me, Muckbill, earlier. What did he do?
Sonny, honestly, that that goal was pure class. Vinny Jr. crosses the ball to him. He just does a slight chip shot. The ball comes right about almost shoulder level, and he just knows instinctually what to do with it and just goes up for what looked to me like a scissors kick and bicycle kick hybrid. I don't even know what it was, but it was lovely, and it was at the back of the net, man. It was a beautiful goal. Definitely in the conversation for one of the better goals of the tournament so far.
Yeah, what really stunned me was his reaction time after he controlled the ball, how quickly he kicked it.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of watching Masterclass when it comes to these experienced players on such a grand scale. You have somebody who just in a split second is able to know what to do in order to get the ball in the back of the net. It was amazing. Very acrobatic.
Now, my second favorite goal in Qatar comes from a Saudi player, Al Dawsari, and the Saudis pulled off the biggest upset so far in the tournament, coming back with two second-half goals to just really upset Argentina and Lionel Messi. But talk about Al Dawsari's goal.
Man, his goal was so beautiful because of it was such a tight space. He had to find an opening, swung it a little bit to his right side. He was on the left side of the pitch, and he really went for a curve at the top upper right 90. Goalie got his hands on it, just wasn't enough. Back of the net, classic goal. Very class. Funny story. MBS is reportedly said to have wanting to buy each of the players from the Saudi Arabia team a Rolls Royce Phantom for their win against Argentina.
Wow. I'm not counting out.
Unbelievable.
I'm not counting out Lionel Messi in Argentina. I think sentimentally, a lot of football fans, they want to see that team in the knockout stages of this tournament. Your thoughts, Mukbil?
Yeah, I definitely think that they're one of the teams that have a very big fan base across all continents and all people. Germany's another one that is that lost to Japan, who find themselves in a bit of a struggle situation trying to come out of that group with Spain and Japan now with 3 points each. So it's going to be interesting. Group stages this year has been very exciting, to say the least bit. But we're definitely excited. We will keep you all up to date with everything that we have coming up. Top goal scorers quickly are, I would say,
Valencia
with 3 goals, Saka with 2 goals, Gerrard with 2 goals, and Richarlison with 2 goals. There's a bunch of other stars that have 2 goals as well. But, man, this is exciting, Sonny.
Iran has a victory. Saudi Arabia has a victory. Tunisia and Morocco have draws. What impact is it to be? I won't say they're playing on home turf, Mukbil, but I think they feel comfortable playing in the Middle East.
They must feel, because they're showing us a great performance so far. Fortunately, the host country, Qatar, even though they are an Arabic-speaking country as well, have found their way out of the tournament, unfortunately for them. But we'll definitely keep everyone up to date on our next podcast. Stay tuned on Goal with Sonny and Mukbil.
Again, Mukbil, we have 2 more African teams on the pitch. We have Tunisia and Morocco. Tunisia plays Australia. How do you see that match?
Tunisia and Australia, I definitely feel like Tunisia could come away with the victory. As we've seen, Australia had that first initial goal against France, but outside of that, they were playing defense and didn't really have any more great shots at goal. So could this be the match for Tunisia to get their 3 points? It's possible.
The Moroccans have a tough match, Mukbil. They go up against Belgium. Belgium edge Canada 1-0 in their opener. How do you see Belgium-Morocco?
Belgium's probably the tougher team in that group, so it's going to be a bit difficult. But yeah, as we said, we will be back next week on Goal with Sonny and Mukbil. Have a good one.